Hello, and welcome to this Innovation Forum webinar in partnership with the Economist Intelligence Unit and sponsored by the US Cotton Trust Protocol. I'm Ian Welsh from Innovation Forum, and I'll be your host for the next hour or so. Today sees the launch of a new report from the Economist Intelligence Unit, Is Sustainability in Fashion? That examines how leading figures at some of the world's top fashion brands and retailers are engaging on the big sustainable business challenges for the sector. And in this webinar, we are going to be analysing some of the report's findings and reflect in particular why the fashion sector could benefit from more and better data. To help frame our discussion, I'm delighted to be joined by an expert panel, Dr. Gary Adams, President of the US Cotton Trust Protocol and President and CEO of the National Cotton Council of America, Jonathan Birdwell, Regional Head of Public Policy and Thought Leadership for Europe, Middle East and Africa at the Economist Intelligence Unit, and Tara Luckman, co-founder and director of Flourish CSR, advisor to the US Cotton Trust Protocol, and formerly head of sustainable sourcing at fashion retailer ASOS. Welcome to you all. Now, we'll hear from our panelists shortly, but we do want to hear from you all. So please submit points and questions using the questions box on the webinar dashboard, and I will put them to our panel a little later on. Please try and keep your questions short and to the point. If you do, it is more likely that I will use them. And my thanks to my Innovation Forum colleague, Jack Munn, for bringing this webinar together. Okay, unusually for an Innovation Forum webinar, to get us started, we do have a presentation today. Jonathan is going to take us through the new report and share some of the background to it and some of the main findings. So let me hand over to him now. Jonathan.
Wonderful. Thank you very much, Ian. And good morning, good afternoon, and potentially good evening to everyone joining us today. So as Ian said, my name is Jonathan Birdwell, and I'm the Regional Director for the Economist Intelligence Unit's Public Policy and Thought Leadership Team. And for those who don't know, hopefully many of you already know us, the Economist Intelligence Unit is the research and analysis arm of the Economist Group, which of course is most well known for publishing the Economist newspaper. And today I'm going to share findings from some of our research on sustainability challenges in the fashion and textile industry, sponsored by the US Cotton Trust Protocol. Our research, which I'll outline today in more detail later on in the presentation, illustrates really the ambitions, the frustrations, confidence and anxieties of the industry's leading executives at a time, of course, of extreme disruption. And we are launching the report today, so I do urge you to download it from the EIU website. I believe Ian will be sending a link shortly on that. So on to the agenda for my presentation. So today I'm going to walk you through our findings, where essentially I'll highlight the following. The first is the scale of the fashion and textile industry's sustainability challenge and the need for change. Second, what we learn from industry leaders about their organizations, what they're doing and what support is needed for a radical transformation on these issues. And then third, what role data plays in helping to drive change throughout the industry. So firstly, we recognize that sustainability in the fashion textile industry is a global problem. I'm sure not a surprise to many of you on this call. And arguably, business as usual is not sustainable. So according to the UN, the fashion and textiles industry generates between 1 and 1.5% of global GDP and is estimated to employ more than 300 million people globally throughout its value chain. And clothing, of course, represents close to 5% of all manufactured goods globally, with China, the EU, and Bangladesh, Vietnam, and India as leading exporters. But it produces around 8% of global greenhouse gas emissions and is estimated to be one of the most polluting industries in the world. So according to the UN, the fashion and textile industry is responsible for more greenhouse gas emissions than all international flights and maritime shipping combined. And these emissions could go up to 25%. By 2050, if nothing is done. So clearly the industry must change. So recognizing the need for change, we asked key decision makers at leading brands about the sustainability challenges that the industry faces today and about how to change the industry for the better in the future. Our goal for this program was simple. It was to really understand what the leading organizations are doing to tackle the industry sustainability problem, and what else needed to what else was needed to enable that change. So in order to answer these questions, we conducted a research program between June and September this year, so right in the midst of the pandemic, that consisted of three elements. The first was a comprehensive literature review to understand the core issues relating to sustainability in the fashion and textile industry. The second was an interview program with key decision makers at brands, industry associations, NGOs, and government. And third, we did a survey of 150 executives in leading retail and textile brands in Europe and North America. So what did we find? Well, we found that brands understand the scope of the sustainability problem and that they're already making changes to address it. So for the majority of survey respondents, implementing sustainability measures was cited as a top strategic priority for their organization, on par with improving customer experience or looking at things like expansion overseas. So it was cited as a core business issue. Most respondents also indicated that they were implementing sustainability measures across their organization, with the majority focused on the implementation of sustainability strategies with concrete targets. We also found that many are focused on investing in new approaches, and with the sourcing of sustainable raw materials as the most popular initiative, followed by reducing greenhouse gas emissions and introducing a circular economy approach. However, of course, the pandemic could threaten progress towards these sustainability objectives. We forecast that the global retail sales volume will decline by just over 6% in 2020, and recovery really will start in 2021, estimated about 2.7% growth. The market will really not return to 2019 levels, we estimate, until 2023. Although, of course, some countries may recover earlier. Now, despite this dire picture, we found that the leaders that we interviewed were still optimistic. Most told us that they were committed to their sustainability targets despite the pandemic, and they also were looking at it as an opportunity for the industry to build back better. That said, to make change, we find that support is needed really across five key areas. So the first is consumers need to better understand the environmental impact of the fashion and textile industry and then commit to purchasing more sustainable goods. We've seen from various surveys that successive generations such as millennials and Gen Z are demanding sustainable products, and brands of course need to respond. Although there's some disagreement as to whether they're saying they prefer these brands and whether they're actually buying it. But nonetheless, you're seeing a lot of a movement among younger consumers around the importance of sustainable products. Second, brands need guidance and support from policymakers to design policies that level the playing field across the industry and provide a roadmap for designing, producing, and distributing sustainable products. Third, brands need tools, technologies, and methodologies that produce reliable and comparable data on the environmental impact of their products across the entire supply chain. Fourth, there's a need for industry-wide standards that help communicate and evidence progress towards sustainability targets to consumers. And fifth, brands need capital to invest and scale up their sustainable solutions, whether that is in innovative technologies or new approaches to producing raw materials, such as regenerative agriculture. So just to drill in on one of the major themes that was coming out of the research was really on the importance of data and the need for more data on environmental impact of products that brands are producing. This includes data on all steps in the supply chain, from sourcing raw materials to textile production and manufacturing, through to distribution, sale, and end of life for products. What we found was that brands are collecting data on their environmental impact of their production processes. This includes supplier sustainability practices, as well as workplace health and safety, the amount of water and energy used in raw material production, greenhouse gas emissions, and the chemicals used in raw material production. But more is needed. In addition to more data, brands also need aligned data collection tools, methodologies, and standards for reducing environmental impact. And we found several key barriers that prevented this from happening. The first was around collaborating with suppliers. data collection processes can be extremely burdensome for suppliers. This could lead them to cut corners or potentially underreport issues if they fear losing contracts with major brands. And our interviewees indicated that suppliers need to be brought on the sustainability journey and to receive support in the event that issues arise rather than condemnation or aggressive confrontational approaches. Second, our interviewees indicated that there are often a dizzying array of technological options available to brands to collect data, but each one is slightly different and the cost can vary greatly. Now, cutting through the noise to find and integrate the right cost-effective technology into a brand's existing systems can be extremely difficult and was often cited as a challenge. And then the third barrier is that currently there is not yet a set of clear industry standards around what constitutes a sustainable garment. Different approaches for labeling products make it difficult for consumers to differentiate between one garment versus another. And a set of agreed upon standards will make it easier for brands to show how their products compare and will enable consumers to make informed purchasing decisions. Now, a lot of factors can drive industry-wide transformation over the next 10 years. You can see on the slide some of the trends and factors that were cited by our survey respondents, including consumer demand as well as technological advances. But really, without robust comparable data transformation, this will not be possible. So this is extremely important. Not only can this help to reduce the cost for retail companies, particularly the long tail of small and medium-sized enterprises, but also in using data for consumer storytelling around impact to make it more than just a marketing exercise. So with that, thank you for your time, and I'll now hand back over to Ian, who will lead us on a discussion on the research and focus on the need for more data
to help
achieve these aims.
Thanks, Jonathan. Quick question. It was interesting to see from your research, there's a sense that there's a real desire from companies to implement sustainability programs and to really embed the sustainability processes in their operations. Do you have any sense how that's changed over the past, the recent past? Have you any sense, what the kind of rate of change of that particular desire on behalf of companies is?
Yeah, it's a good question. I haven't seen any data that would suggest a kind of rate of change, but I think certainly qualitatively in the interviews, there was a sense of real change, particularly in the past, say, 5 years. Before there was a lot of focus and a lot of sort of words devoted to the importance of sustainability, but it was more sort of situated in the marketing departments. And we've really seen a shift into the sort of core business operations of companies. And I think that could be due to a lot of things. I think it could be due to things like the Paris Climate Accord, various focus and increasing focus from investors and ESG funds, the rise of ESG funds. I think there was, I saw cited 360 new ESG funds last year launched. And so I think a lot of those pressures from investors are forcing companies to shift their sustainability focus from their marketing suite right through to the core of their business operations and trying to understand really the impact of their production, their entire supply chain is having on the environment.
Okay, thanks very much, Jonathan. Lots to come back on. Can I encourage everybody, a lot in Jonathan's presentation there, so do be thinking about your questions and put them in the questions box. We already have some people making points already, which is great, but please, we do want to hear from as many people as possible, so do be thinking about your questions and get them into the questions box. Okay, let me turn to Dr. Gary Adams from the US Cotton Trust Protocol. Gary, welcome to the webinar. Perhaps you can take things forward by giving us some background to the work of the US Cotton Trust Protocol initially. Gary.
All right, well, thank you, Ian. And it is a pleasure to be here with you today and join Jonathan and Tara on this panel to talk about the survey results, but also talk about the US Cotton Trust Protocol. And just a couple of words about the protocol. It is a new initiative by the U.S. cotton industry to hopefully drive forward sustainable cotton production. And really a focus of the protocol is to collect quantitative data and measure the management practices of U.S. cotton farmers so that we can hopefully drive forward continuous improvement. We worked with the Economist Intelligence Unit really to do this research because we thought it was important that we understand what leading business in fashion, textiles, and retail are thinking now about sustainability so that it can inform us as we launch and implement the U.S. Cotton Trust Protocol. Certainly, it's a key moment in the industry, and Jonathan pointed this out, given the challenges associated with COVID-19 and the tremendous economic pressure that has brought about on the entire textile supply chain. We also know that the industry understands how important sustainability is, particularly given the data that we saw about the global textile industry being responsible for 8% of global greenhouse gas emissions. I guess just a couple of thoughts from the report in terms of high-level takeaways. I did think it struck me, even in these challenging times, there's still a level of commitment and resiliency within the global textile industry when it comes to their views of sustainability. I think as we look at some of the results to the questions, and particularly given that these responses were taken at the height of the COVID pandemic, that 60% of the leaders that responded talked about sustainability as their second most important strategic objective, which was a close second to improving customer experience. So I think that reinforces the importance of sustainability. I think also it was important that the respondents talked about, I think it was 65% or so, that talked about the importance of sourcing sustainable raw materials. And we see that as an opportunity as they look at the raw materials that are in their products, an opportunity for the U.S. Cotton Trust Protocol to be that supplier of sustainable cotton and also that supplier of data. I think also the report highlighted some of the challenges that the textile supply chain faces in collecting data. And it was interesting that still a number of the brands and retailers that were interviewed or the survey respondents are still not collecting full data because of some of the challenges. So I think that's an opportunity going forward, is how can we identify better means to collect information? How can we identify better means of aligning data and reaching some type of consistency and some type of standard across data? Because without that data, it's really hard to identify areas of continuous improvement and kind of try to drive home that continuous improvement. So I think overall that really underscored the importance of data, that is the foundation of the decision making that they have. So was really pleased with the report, impressed with the results that came out. I think it gives us a lot to think about going forward.
Thanks, Gary. I wondered if you, like I was a little bit surprised at one particular question. 6% of companies responded with the line, "We don't collect data." I mean, that was a little bit surprising, to say the least. Is that the sort of challenge that you find in the sector, that there's still, simply a lack? Some companies just won't collect data. I mean, like, obviously the companies must collect some data on some things, but in terms of their supply chains, is that something that you see? Is that the kind of a challenge that you're trying to address?
It is, and I think you're right, and we understand there's a lot of challenges when they look at collecting that information and then being able to interpret that data and try to make decisions off of it. So certainly that's one of the challenges we want to address, and we're collecting as we enroll cotton producers into the U.S. Cotton Trust Protocol. We're providing them with some data tools where they can provide data on their input usage, on their management practices, and then we can translate that data into key environmental metrics on things such as water efficiency, energy use, greenhouse gas emissions, soil conservation. So the hope is that we can then collect that information and provide that data to the brands and retailers in a way that's useful to them. And we do see that as a major challenge, but it's hopefully a need that we can fill with the U.S. Cotton Trust Protocol.
Okay. Many thanks, Gary. Again, lots to come back on there, and we'll hear from you again shortly. But let me turn now to Tara Luckman. Tara, you've also had a chance to look at the report. What are your reflections on the report's conclusions?
Oh, thank you, Ian, Gary, Jonathan, for inviting me to comment. As somebody that's worked in sustainable fashion for many years, I think it's a fascinating time to be having this discussion on the industry's transformation in relation to sustainability. So coming to the report, I find it hugely encouraging to see an enduring and perhaps even increasing commitment to sustainability despite the impact of the pandemic. And I read in a couple of key drivers here, perhaps corporate ambition on demonstrating climate change action. As Jonathan said, a more scientific approach is becoming visible, but that coupled also with growing consumer expectation. I wonder if some listeners will be surprised to see a commercial sector like fashion asking for greater regulation. The fashion sector would like to have a level playing field for metrics to be consistent so that they can easily be understood by their consumers, by other stakeholders, investors, and so on, to give them more confidence to communicate without fear of misrepresenting information or creating greenwash, and the customer confusion that that can lead to. So while there's those much needed regulatory changes that will take time, the sentiment we can understand here is that the report shows the willingness of the business community to coalesce. We can see this evidence through the growing support for voluntary collaborations like the Sustainable Apparel Coalition, really sharing the effort, working together to try and harmonise around complex data in the absence of regulatory oversight. So regulation will help, but brands are not waiting for that to happen. In terms of the way that brands use data right now, I think there's a divergence in brands' needs and perhaps their ability to use the available data for decision making. So I'm seeing more mature businesses seeking depth and breadth of a range of metrics to support their ambitious roadmaps on climate change. But I'm also seeing less mature businesses at the other end of the spectrum that perhaps don't have the in-house expertise on environmental accounting, finding the many sources of data confusing or difficult to navigate. And that group recognises the need to address their impacts, but would also be able to like to apply the metrics in the context of their own supply chain, perhaps start to get a hold of their scope 3 emissions. But perhaps they lack the visibility of the supply chain to do that well. And that can lead to a kind of onset of fear or paralysis for some businesses that don't want to be hung out to dry for making the wrong decisions. So they're sort of paralyzed into not taking any decisions, which is bad for us all. So there's a need there to service both of those audiences and everybody in between with accessible data so that we can all make progress. But I think the key thing to note is that the environmental impact data is no longer a sort of niche interest of large brands. It is becoming necessary for us all and a critical element of strategic decision making. The validity of data has become a focus for brands. Brands are questioning the data sets that they've historically used to support their decision making in this area. For example, tools like life cycle analysis are very useful, but there's a growing understanding that LCA data is a snapshot in time, it's a picture. It can't always be used to extrapolate through time or sideways to support the claims a brand might like to support. And given the magnitude of the impact cascaded from decision making at brand level, for example, in their selection of raw materials, they quite rightly now want those decisions to be based on actual data, relevant to their own supply chain, as close to real time as possible. So this is pointing to the need for data that's robust, it's current, and it can be applied to a variety of businesses in their relevant context. So overall, I'm seeing a really encouraging progression in the way that businesses are interrogating their impacts, no longer just looking for a simple comparison of this fibre is better than that fibre, but looking at a wider set of indicators that answer both a short and a long-term question. Can we use data to help us show that we're making the best materials choices for today? And at the same time, can we support our strategy to address climate change at the right pace?
Thanks, Tara. I wondered if you could, given your experience in the sector, could you give us a bit more of the sense of the kind of rate of change or the scale of or the sense of change that there is within the industry to really be willing to collaborate around data and B to really get to the heart of the core sustainability challenges that face the sector.
I do see a kind of renewed pace for this, perhaps as we enter a new decade, and people starting to set very firm long-term targets. I do think that the UN Fashion Charter and related commitments like the Fashion Pact and the Ellen MacArthur activities have laid a global challenge that businesses are trying to respond to. And there's a kind of scrabble, if you like, to try and get enough data to make good decisions to set the roadmaps that will get us there. So there's no debate over whether we should be working to the Paris climate change, that's agreed, but it's how to achieve it in a business context and how to make decisions you can be confident with. So having the data available to do so is absolutely critical to making meaningful decisions, particularly as the case for investment starts to be explored that supports brands being able to entrench those sustainable practices throughout their business and make really meaningful changes.
Right, great, thanks very much indeed. Thank you everybody for your questions coming in thick and fast. There's lots of interesting points that we will be raising with the panel shortly. I want to just one final discussion point before we turn to audience questions, and really thinking about what good data collection looks like. Obviously, there's lots of different ways to collect data points, lots of different ways to use those data points. But in general terms, what does good data collection look like? Gary, do you want to have first go at some thoughts on that?
Yeah, thank you, Ian. Good data collection, I believe, one is you've got to have the right tools to make sure you're collecting that information. And I do think that's a part of it, do you have the right tools and the way to pull that information in and interpret that data and put that together? I know, within the Trust Protocol, we're actually using a tool that we refer to as the Fieldprint Calculator, which was developed by a sustainability alliance known as Field to Market. So I think, finding that tool that can be used that is as user-friendly as can be, because there's always a burden with collecting data, so you have to make use of technology and collect that information. I think the other key part, once you have that tool in place, is and you've made use of technology to collect that data, is at some point in the process, it seems there's got to be some type of checks and balances and some type of oversight, whether it be random verifications or auditing, to make sure there is quality with the data that is collected. I think that's the other part, is having it in a way that it can be collected in a user-friendly manner, but then there's got to be a checks and balances as you look at some type of auditing verification of that information to make sure that it is meaningful data, because if it's going to serve as the basis for business decisions, investments, then certainly there's got to be a quality and integrity to the data. So that would be the couple of points I would make in that regard.
Thank you. Thank you, Gary. Jonathan, do you have any thoughts to add, the sense around what for you does good data collection look like?
Yeah, of course. At the EIU, we deal in data, so we know what good and bad data looks like. And I think Gary touched on a number of important points, but maybe just to reiterate a few. Good data is standardized so that it can be comparable, that there's clear metrics, that everyone's using the same metrics, that those are understood and agreed. The data collection methodologies, variance in how data is collected, whether it's self-reported surveys or auditors visiting suppliers, that can have an impact on comparability. Anything down to the answer choices on a survey, is it using the same 5-point scale or a 7-point scale? These sorts of things can also impact on data comparability. A point that Tara made, is it time series data? Is it year on year? Is it collected with a certain regularity? Because if it's not, then it's really hard to be, it just becomes a snapshot in time, and it's really hard to understand trends. I think good data is accessible. It has to be collected and then cleaned up and organized in a consistent manner. So again, it can come down to really small things like standardizing dates or country codes or languages. These can make a really big difference. And then I think just the point that Gary made around verifiability, we need to be able to have third parties go in and check the quality and the robustness of that data. Of course, we have systems at the EIU to make sure that we're checking all of the analyses that we're doing and it's verifiable. So that's really important. I think one of the key challenges that we see with, you know, great initiatives like the Higgs Index by the Sustainable Apparel Coalition, you know, it's a really important tool, but we're still relying a lot on user-generated data or, you know, self-reporting from suppliers. And I think, you know, to sort of address these issues, because that will always be prone to potential error, it will be potentially unreliable, some of the pressures potentially on suppliers could lead them to misstate or, you know, underreport certain things. And so I do think, you know, new technologies, new emerging technologies, you know, whether it's Internet of Things and the creation of digital twins or small sensors, blockchain technology, you know, I do think some of these challenges around data collection and standardization, you know, will have to be solved by new and emerging technologies. Otherwise, I think we will still have, you know, it will still be quite a big burden to collect all that data to get it in a state that is analyzable and consistent across the industry.
Thank you, Jonathan. And I think you actually addressed very nicely some of the points that was made. Our very first point was that was made today from our audience was almost a bit of a kind of perhaps a kind of almost slightly rolling of the eyes suggesting that there's a lot of data collected already. And the problem isn't perhaps more data, but relevant and useful data. I think you Jonathan and Gary make that point very well. Tara, do you want to do you have any further comments to make on the sort of what good data collection looks like?
I think it's been covered really. I would just add that it's just to keep the end point in mind, really. I think not data for data's sake. I think we've got to be very clear about what the data is for and where we're trying to drive change in the industry and base business decisions on it. By keeping the change that we want to see in mind, that can inform where we need to get the most accurate data, most valid current data, as we've been discussing, without sort of getting lost in a sea of big data. Just try and keep the big goals in mind as we look at data.
Great, well, thank you. Okay, I want to turn to audience questions now, and they are coalescing around a few similar themes. One in particular is just, and it touches on the sort of the difficulty and the frustrations around different types of data and uncomparable data, particularly when you're asking for data from suppliers. And this comes back to the points that Jonathan just touched on. So, panel, I mean, do you think there's scope for cross-sectoral collaboration within the sector to get aligned information? And what are the challenges to get everyone asking the same questions to suppliers and suppliers able to give the same sort of same data points back? Gary, do you want to touch on that?
Yeah, thank you, Ian. I think the audience has certainly identified some, a key concern, particularly when you're dealing with so many different parts of the supply chain. And I guess it goes back to, I think, a few points that have already been made, both by Jonathan and Tara, in terms of standardization of reporting. I think how can, you know, what is a standard methodology that can be used in order to collect that information across the various parts of the supply chain? And I do think there is a really good point that came out of the research that if there's too much pressure on the reporting in the supply chain, it can lead to the falsifying of data or inaccurate data. And I think that becomes a problem. But at some point, it really boils down to some type of standardization in the reporting. In other words, to have, and whether it can be some type of common platform that's developed, but that information being put in a way that it can be ultimately digested in a consistent format.
Okay, thanks, Gary. Tara, slight variation on the question. On the kind of challenge of finding standard ways of reporting data, how do you think we can incentivize companies to do that? I mean, what are the kind of push and pulls that can really maybe work in this regard?
Well, we've talked a little bit about the aspiration to be better regulated as an industry, and I think we can start to see that coming in a voluntary fashion. So I would encourage businesses to be part of that conversation, to collaborate across the sector, share the best practice on data collection and harmonisation. I think it's a moving feat, and it's no good sort of sitting on the outside of that and complaining that the data's not strong enough for you to make decisions. I think there's a responsibility for everybody to get involved and to improve it where we can, and be prepared to sort of balance progress with perfection as we go. We can continue to strive for better and use the best available data to inform our decisions and harmonise as we go.
Great, thank you. Jonathan, I've got a specific question I want to put to you from our audience, and it's asking at what point, if your research turned this up, but at what point of the value chain does most greenhouse gas emissions in textiles occur? Did your research highlight anything of that?
Yeah, so I think it was quite interesting. We had a few examples from brands, smaller brands like Reformation, which is an LA-based brand, which does some really interesting work and has their own tool, through to Puma and Adidas, which, having gone through the process of collecting the data to understand their impact, you know, they found that, I think for Reformation, it was 2/3 of the impact they were having was occurring even before the clothes were made. So it was in the sourcing of raw materials. And I think the same thing was found by Puma and Adidas. And so that's why they're really focusing on looking at those raw materials. You know, how can those either be produced in a more sustainable way, or how could recycled materials be used as those raw materials? So, you know, I think that was, clearly, now it might differ, of course, for different brands, but I think the very start of the value chain, you know, the raw materials, it seems to be where a lot of brands are seeing that they're having the biggest impact and where they should be focusing their efforts first and foremost.
Thanks, Jonathan. Okay, sharing data, again, something that we've talked a little bit about already, but it is a real problem. For often data is seen by brands and their suppliers, it's obviously proprietary information, and sharing it and developing transparency is a real challenge. Gary, I wondered if you have any thoughts around the sort of things that companies can do to help improve the visibility of their data in the supply chain, and at the same time maintain the right level of proprietary checks that they obviously need to have. I mean, it's a difficult problem. Gary, what thoughts do you have?
Ian, it is a difficult problem, and in terms of that visibility of data, and also, though, protecting the confidential information. I would go back, if I might, just to a key point I thought Jonathan made on the previous question, if I can just digress for a bit on that, 2/3 of the impact on of the greenhouse gases being on the sourcing of raw materials. And I would just reiterate, I think that's why some of the information we're collecting at within the U.S. Cotton Trust Protocol about the production of U.S. cotton within the protocol, and trying to come up with those metrics, particularly on greenhouse gas emissions and other key metrics, I do think that can be an important source of data for the brands and retailers as they really focus in on that particular issue. So I wanted to throw that point in. Now, coming back to, you know, the question on the visibility of data and how they can look at that again, you know, it comes back to, I think, in general, you know, some consistent approach in terms of the collection and the reporting. And that's easy to say, and it's harder to envision how that comes about. But without, you know, some type of standards on the reporting, it's very challenging to get that type of visibility and that data, and that data that's comparable for the brands and retailers. And I think, as much as anything, this just reinforces the need for some type of consistency and some type of standard on that data collection.
Okay. Tara, do you have any thoughts on that? The sort of difficulties around data sharing, and just what can be done to improve the visibility for everybody?
Well, I do think this is part of the mission of the Sustainable Apparel Coalition, and that's why it's getting as much support and uptake as it is. I think they would say themselves that it's a young mission that doesn't have all of the answers yet, and it's not perfect, but that's quite core to their goal in terms of being able to facilitate the data sharing and the comparability of that data within the industry. But it's an enormous undertaking. So yes, I don't have the solution for that, other than to say that that work is underway.
Good. Okay, well, thank you. Let me turn to another issue that's come up a number of times from our audience, and it's thinking around social impacts. Jonathan, can you go back into your research? And what evidence have you found for desire in the sector to really engage on social impacts? We've talked quite a lot about environmental impacts, but obviously social impacts in the fashion sector are high risk as well. So what evidence have you seen for a desire to really engage and knuckle down on social impacts?
Yeah, it's a great question. The most part, our work did focus on the environmental impact, but you know, we did see that workplace health and safety was the second most cited priority for brands, and I think as well as sort of inequality issues. And I think a lot of that comes out of the disaster that we saw Rana Plaza in Bangladesh in 2013. So, you know, whilst the focus of our research was on the environmental side, you know, I do think that the social aspects, such as workplace health and safety, are really important. We've seen, of course, those are an important component of ESG measures. And, you know, we've seen some retailers, for example, Boohoo in the UK, after having received higher scores on from ESG rating providers, seeing that some evidence that perhaps there were some lapses around some of the social concerns there. And so I sort of just to point back maybe to some of the past discussion around kind of transparency. You know, I think it's just one point to add. I think it's interesting that today, you know, the Wall Street Journal came out with its 100 most sustainable companies looking across a range of industries. And I think, you know, when companies see these sorts of measures and don't see their own name within those lists, there were only three companies that were fashion or textile retailers in that list. You know, they will start to also see a kind of reputational pressure matched with the pressure from investors to be more transparent on these measures and to really be putting them at the sort of core of their business strategies. So that's, of course, you know, it can points to both the environmental and the social concerns, which are important within the fashion industry.
Tara, I wondered if you had any thoughts or comments on the social impact side and just how to kind of fashion brands can really engage on that as well.
I think it's an area of work that's in some ways more mature in the fashion industry than the environmental work. I think the understanding of the issues has been there for some time, but I think the barrier to addressing them has often been cited as transparency of supply chains. And I think now that we're bringing environmental and social understanding and metrics closer together. And as you get deeper into the supply chain, those two issues become inextricably linked. You can't solve one without addressing the other or impacting the other. That there's a kind of more mature understanding now from the industry of that the environmental and social measures go together. And to address them both, we have to build transparency in the supply chain. So I think we're kind of got a common understanding of that now, but obviously there's still a gap in terms of action and another area for continuous improvement.
Sure. Okay, well, thank you, Tara. Gary, a lot of issues I want to cover, so I'm going to change tack again. We talked about the issue of self-reporting in the sector and something that is highly prevalent. In such times when brands and their suppliers are self-reporting, what's the role of auditing to really ensure that the data that they're providing is correct? We've talked already about the importance of meaningful data. So how do we go about it? What's the best practice in terms of guaranteeing where companies are self-reporting that the data that they're reporting is in fact correct? Is it auditing or what are the other possibilities? Gary?
I do think that there has to be some level of independent auditing or independent verification to kind of hold the system accountable and to verify that information. I know as we're putting the U.S. Cotton Trust Protocol together, and I'll just use that as an example. We have producers cotton producers, as they enroll in the program, they're providing their own data into the system in terms of their management practices, but also on their uses of inputs and the way they farm as they put that into the data tool. So that is essentially self-reported data, but at the same time, there will be random selection of those participating producers that will be subjected to a verification. And we're, within the trust protocol, using a group called Control Union Certifications for that independent verification. So While not everybody will be selected for that independent verification, they know that there is a chance that they will be selected given the random sampling process. So I think that brings a certain amount of accountability. And then the actual verifications, where there is an auditor that goes to that farm, or it might be going to a business to actually perform that audit, be on site so that they can check the validity of the data that was provided. So to me, I think that's a key part, is that one, the people that provide data know that there is the possibility of a random auditor or verification visit, and that being performed by an independent, credible body.
Thanks, Gary. Tara, do you have anything further to add there, when the challenges of dealing with businesses that are self-reporting?
I think, yes, I recognise the challenge, but also recognise the sort of issue of fatigue by over audit and duplication of audit in the fashion industry. I think it's something we've learnt over the years, particularly as we look back at the evolution of the work to address social standards in the industry. And we've, you know, many brands have audited their manufacturers and supply chains and not necessarily solve the problems in doing so. So there's a place for audit, but that's got to be in the context of a number of other factors as well, and continuous improvement programs, using good data to drive the right activities to get to the root of a problem that you're trying to solve, as opposed to being in a situation where you blanket audit everything and you're hiding behind audit, as opposed to using it contextually as a tool to support the data that you like to evidence, but also build actions on the back of that.
Yeah, sure. I mean, audit fatigue is something we have heard of a lot in the past, of course. And you know, it keeps coming back to the kind of meaningful data points, doesn't it? It's developing meaningful data that works and that is relevant and useful for all parts of the value chain. Jonathan, I wondered if you had any evidence in your research around the capacity of businesses in the fashion sector to be aware of the risks of asking too much from suppliers that they share. I mean, you mentioned that a barrier to transparency was the collaboration with suppliers point, and suppliers being concerned about potentially losing business if they were transparent in the wrong way, sort of thing. So what characterizes the results of your research that looks at this area and says that businesses are aware of the dangers of audit fatigue among suppliers?
Yeah, I think if you, it really came out strongly in the interviews, essentially, especially if suppliers are, working with many different retailers, each with their own separate tool or metrics that they want to collect. Of course, that can be extremely difficult for suppliers to then be able to service all of that. And could just lead them to sort of give up or want to give up. I think, as I mentioned, the sort of HIG index developed by the Sustainable Apparel Coalition is a fantastic initiative and really important. But it's also very complex. Their questions are, it was 81 pages of questions, and sort of going through those and seeing the level of detail, I do think it would be very difficult for suppliers. I think the other point to sort of bear in mind is how the data is collected from suppliers, the different types. Is it just suppliers filling in a survey and sort of sending that in, or are retail companies or their auditors going and visiting those supplier warehouses, of course, which at the moment they can't do. So I think you need to be very, very mindful of that. And what really came out strongly with the interviews was just that, and I mentioned it before, the importance of the quality of the relationship then between the retailer and the supplier. I think making sure that it's one of a trusting relationship, that the retailer is telling the supplier that they're bringing them on a journey, they'd rather them be open and honest, they're not going to be penalized for it, but to be open and honest about the burdens and the challenges of providing that data and then working together to find a solution, because it really is critical, for the retail fashion textile sector as a whole to make progress to ensure that the suppliers are coming along on that journey.
Thanks very much indeed, Jonathan. We've been talking a lot about collecting data so far, obviously, but I want to think a bit about now about the sort of the tools and techniques that are emerging. We have a question asking about how much the fashion sector is open to the use of emerging technology to make supply chains more transparent and allow traceability, and generally using and developing new sustainability standards. So Gary, what have you seen from the fashion sector in terms of a desire and a willingness to use emerging technology?
Well, and certainly welcome Tara's views on that as well. I would say one of the things that I think came out of the survey was in terms of the concerns in those tools and technologies is the cost that might be involved in the investment. So I do think they recognize the importance of the technology and the tools, but also I think there's a concern about the cost associated with some of those tools and technologies to collect the data. So that's, I think, one of the challenges that has to be addressed. How can something, you know, how can we implement some tools and technologies that are scalable, that allows that information to be collected on a very broad-based basis?
Thanks, Gary. Yes, Tara, perhaps same point to you. What evidence are you seeing from your work around the sector being open to the use of emerging technology?
Yeah, I think there's a couple of interesting aspects to that. In the broader sort of context of using data to impact sustainable choices, I think brands are increasingly trying to build a more balanced picture of their supply base and put more hard measures around their choice of suppliers, and that, you know, like a balanced scorecard for a supply base, for example, so that it's not only product quality or delivery time or sort of financial measures that win suppliers business, but the environmental measures and the social measures sit equally weighted alongside those, so that the business is won by the right suppliers, enforcing that trust and partnership that we've been discussing. So I do think there's appetite for that and using the tools that we've been talking about to inform those business decisions. And I think we can just even in very recent times see how necessity sort of forces adoption sometimes of digital technologies that people might be nervous of. So I would cite something like digital garment sampling as a good example of something that was around pre-COVID and was available, but, you know, we're human beings and we built habits. So buying, you know, is often dependent on touching and feeling a sample or having a meeting and the personal relationships involved. But by sheer necessity and COVID, in order for business to continue, a lot of that shifted into a digital routine because the technology was already there, ready to be adopted. So buying houses were approving samples that they'd never seen. They've only seen them in a digital fashion. And it's likely that will then stick because the new practice has been adopted. So sometimes it's a bit about necessity and sort of forcing it a little bit.
Okay, thanks very much indeed. We are coming towards the end of our debate, and I do want to put to our panel a final point, just to think about how we get better, consistent data collection going forwards. So Gary, for you, what are the things you want to see going forward? So what do you think are the key things that the sector needs to be aware of in terms of developing better data and making data collection more consistent?
Well, I guess the first point I would make is in terms of that data collection is more communication across the various sectors of the industry. I think that's going to be a key part, is the communication as you're looking at whether you're talking about those producers at the raw fiber level all the way up to the brands and retailers. We need to think about a system that can allow all of those parts of the supply chain to participate in that. And again, I go back to the other key point would be those meaningful standards. So there's communication, but there's also developing standards. Thought it was interesting in the survey results, and pointed this out earlier, just in terms of the desire to see more government guidance, more guidance from policymakers on that standardization. So I think that's a key point as well, so that there is high quality data that everybody can use and consider to be essential. So I guess that's a key part in that. And I go back to, I think if we're trying to collect data within the U.S. Cotton Trust Protocol, we want to we want to again collect it on those key metrics that are important to brands and retailers and provide that to them in a way that they can use within their own CSR reporting and their own business decisions.
If you had a policymaker on the panel, Gary, what would be the one thing that you would ask them to consider doing more of?
I think probably it's probably what role they can play in standardization of trying to collect the information would be how do they, and we've seen this in other areas outside of sustainability in terms of collecting data and trying to put together data. Can they play a role in terms of that standardization? That would probably be the key point I would make to them.
Okay, thanks very much, Gary. Jonathan, a similar initial question to you. What do you want to see more of? What do you think needs to be done better to get consistent data collection in the sector?
Yeah, I think, personally, as I think I've mentioned before, I think technological advancements are really going to help here. If we use things, if we can get more take up of things like blockchain, it seems this year has been the year of the QR code in terms of track and trace systems. You know, can we use technologies to really help to ease the burden and to ensure that we're collecting data in a more standardized way? So I think ways in which we can get investment into those technologies is really important, whether venture capital firms could look into that. Again, as I say, there's increasing focus from the investment community around ensuring that brands are reporting their impact on ESG measures. You know, can that help to encourage standardization across the industry? I think Gary's right. There's definitely a role for governments here. We saw that in the survey. We've seen, of course, in Europe. I'd say Europe's further along in terms of all the work at the EU level with the EU Green Deal and some of the work on circular economy. We've seen some recent initiatives in France and Germany. So I think there's definitely a role for government in helping to sort of standardize some of those reporting requirements. But I would also look to, I think there's, organizations like the U.S. Cotton Trust, trade organizations, also organizations like the World Economic Forum. You know, they recently came out with a report on stakeholder capitalism. The work of their International Business Council brought together the five sort of leading voluntary framework and standing setters for the first time to work towards a joint vision of standardizing ESG measures. And I think those sorts of initiatives can really lead the way and lead a kind of sector change. And that's, again, something that came out of the research around, the role of big brands really being the first movers and then helping to bring the industry along. And so the more that there can be coalitions and coordination between those big brands on some of these initiatives, I think that can really help both get the technology and the standardization for the data that we need to see.
Okay, thanks, Jonathan. Tara, same to you. What do we need to be seeing from the sector to really get better, consistent data collection?
Well, I think participation really is the main thing because, Jonathan's right, there's some exciting technologies that are going to help us enormously here. But I think, there's a danger of waiting for that. We mustn't wait for a golden fleece or for blockchain to sort of solve all of our problems overnight. We have to really engage with it as an industry. We have to be sharing information, discussing it, using the fora available, create these data sets, refine them, iterate them, make them transparent. And that's going to help us get into a much better place so that when the technology comes, it will be plug and play. And I think if I had an ask for a regulator, it would be to require transparency of ESG practices around businesses in particular, so that there's nowhere for sort of poor practices to hide.
Okay, thanks, Tara. Gary, back to you, final point. If we did this webinar again in a year's time, what do you hope would be the main talking point that we would be covering?
I guess one would be that if we do this in a year's time, that some of the economic damage that we've seen due to the post-pandemic would be somewhat in our rearview mirror would be the first thing I would hope. But I would say, too, that I would hope that we have seen some progress or at least some steps being taken to some of these issues on the data collection. And also, I hope we're in a point with the U.S. Cotton Trust Protocol a year down the road that we've provided data to the textile supply chain and information that they feel useful.
Gary, thanks very much indeed. Okay, I'm going to draw the discussion to a close here, as we are now running out of time. Thanks so much for our panel for their time and insight, to Jonathan and to Gary and to Tara. It's been a fascinating hour and I've thoroughly enjoyed the conversation. My thanks to the US Cotton Trust Protocol for their support of this webinar. We will be in touch to share a recording of this so you can listen to it again at your leisure and share with your colleagues. But for now, I hope you found the past hour interesting. I've been Ian Welsh and thank you for joining us.